supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got one of those jam-packed shows for you this week, Cats and Kittens. In the question of the week, we'll talk about the legality and the practicality of moving plants from one place to another, especially when you're in Fargo in February. We're also going to give you a preview of the 2018 Philadelphia Flower Show, focusing on the wonders of water. It's going to be wet and wild. And we'll get to all that after a couple of your wet and wild phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Paul, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Paul. How are you, sir?
I'm good today. It's kind of cold, but I'm good.
Okay. Where is Paul good?
In Delran, New Jersey.
Very good. In the Garden State. What can we do for you?
Right off 130. I have a fig tree that's about 20, 25 years old.
Right.
And it's not tall. It's wide.
Oh, that's good.
You know, but I've had a couple of problems with it. I put leaves all around it once, pretty deep, and the mice lived in them.
Yep.
They ringed the bottom of the tree, and it died.
Mm-hmm.
And then it did come up again in the spring. And then I guess the last couple of bad winters, it died once or twice from the frost. Now, this past year, it came up. I think they were about 20 figs, and the very last cold spell got it. And I think I lost everything but three. And I had those figs, and they were very good because of only those.
Just to let you know what you were missing.
Yes, exactly. And I did miss them. And what should I do with this? It's, you know, it's big and wide enough. I put tarps around it sometime. Try burlap, but burlap's hard to work with. Have it tarps all around it.
First, let's go back to what you talked about, because this is important. A lot of people will take the easy way out and make a cage around the fig and fill it with shredded leaves, which seems to make sense because it is going to insulate the plant against the winter winds and everything like that. But as you discovered, every small rodent that can get through the cage is going to live in there, and then they're living in there, and there's this tasty bark. And if this were a true tree, then it would be forever dead, because once you girdle a real tree, it can no longer transport nutrients up and back from the roots to the crown. But figs are more shrub-like. Even though you say it died and came back, you know, more times than the most famous person who did that, really what happened is the top part of the plant died, but these roots are really tenacious. Okay. And I've never heard of a situation where the roots of a fig did not re-sprout in the spring. Mm-hmm. But in New Jersey, without that top growth, without some of it still being alive, there just really isn't time to produce a good crop of figs. Mm-hmm. Now, you want to stay away from any kind of tarp or any kind of plastic because you want the fig to be able to breathe over winter.
Okay.
And I can understand what you say about burlap, but maybe you're not using it correctly.
It's possible.
What a lot of people do, and especially because your fig is a nice height, it's very manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to compress it a little bit by wrapping twine around the branches now?
I thought of that, yes.
Okay, so that's the first thing you would do. You wouldn't do any pruning at all now, especially with the size of your plant. So you wrap twine around it and make it as tight as you can, and then you would wrap burlap around the outside of that. You wouldn't throw it over top like a carpet.
Okay.
Because then snow is going to lay on top of that, or even heavy rains and then freezing temperatures. You can imagine what that does to the plant underneath.
Right.
So mostly what you want to do is wrap the sides with burlap or go out to a good independent garden center and hope they still have gardening supplies instead of just giant inflatable Homer Simpson Santa Clauses this time of year, and get some heavy-duty row cover. which is just spun fabric blankets. If you don't want to invest in that, and they're not expensive, and if you have a garden, they're great things to keep your lettuce and spinach going over the winter even. Okay. You can wrap old sheets around it. You must have some old sheets that have rips or something in them. So that's the perfect material. After you wrap the twine around the fig, wrap a couple of old sheets around the outside. And don't be afraid to go over the top if you can, but don't go nuts there. And just make sure that the wind is blocked and the fig can breathe. Then you wrap that with twine again to keep everything in place.
Okay.
And then as soon as the plants in your neighborhood start blooming, get all of that off of there. You know, if the sheets are still in good shape, save them for the following year. And then once your fig is all greened up, cut off any dead parts that didn't survive over winter. 9 times out of 10, this plant, this type of plant in your climate, just wrapping it with cotton or spun polyester row covers, no plastic, no tarps, nothing heavy, and then pruning it after it's unwrapped in the spring, but only cutting off the dead parts, should get you a great crop of figs in New Jersey.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you very much for the help.
Oh, my pleasure. I hope you get a bunch of figs next year, man.
I'll give you a call in the spring. How's that?
Oh, no, give me a call in the fall and tell me how you did.
Okay, very good.
All right, Paul. Good luck, sir.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Elizabeth, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. How are you?
Well, I don't want to quack your duck, but Ducky was one of my nicknames.
Okay. Well, we can be ducky together, Elizabeth. How's that?
Thank you. Yes, I can definitely relate.
Okay. So where is Elizabeth Ducky?
Middletown, Ohio.
Oh, very good.
Which is 30 miles north of Cincinnati.
All right. So what can we do for Elizabeth in Ohio?
I want to know about what you can tell me about best practices for planting milkweed for monarchs.
Right.
In the spring.
More and more often, you can find milkweed plants for sale in good independent garden centers. You're not going to find them in a big box store. You also want to be in touch with your local agricultural extension office. The extension people are your best resource for the type of milkweed that grows best in your region, because there's many different types and you want to grow one that's going to do well in your climate. And the bonus there in contacting them is they may know of a great resource near you.
Actually, the Cincinnati Nature Center sells milkweed plant seeds in the early spring.
Are you good at seed starting, though?
I don't have recent experience.
If I remember correctly, and this was a question of the week we did many years ago, one of my butterfly friends talked about germinating milkweed seed. And it's a little tricky. It's not just throw it on the ground and forget about it. So I would be surprised. Do they not have a native plant sale as well as selling seeds?
I will find out.
Because I know the plants are for sale in the spring. And one thing that it's hard for a lot of gardeners to wrap their heads around because it seems so natural, seed starting is actually much harder than the actual gardening. And the skills involved are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to learn how to garden with plants first. And then if you want to move up the ladder, spend a couple of winters getting seed starting down correctly. So if you want to read the directions and give it a shot, there's nothing to lose if you still can buy plants. So you would go to our website, youbetyourgarden.org, and click on right at the top of the page. It says Garden Answers A to Z. Go to M and read the articles on milkweed. And we walk you through the process of germinating the seed. But I would personally start with plants. In terms of the area, milkweed likes full sun and good drainage. Otherwise, as its name implies, it's a weed. It'll grow real well, you know, unless the soil doesn't drain, unless it's in deep shade. And the one thing, you don't want to feed it or mess with it. You know, good soil, good sun, good drainage, and it'll flourish. And you should see the very distinctive caterpillars feeding on it in the spring. But if you really want to help monarchs, don't forget to help them out in the fall. And that means two things. When they're migrating, they need a lot of pollen and nectar. So you also want to get plants that produce lots of flowers in the fall. And the best one is called Tithonia. It's Mexican sunflower. It's not a true sunflower, but this plant, I grew it in my garden this year. It was amazing. I mean, it started blooming in the spring, and I just kept cutting off the dead flowers, and it kept blooming until the first frost, and there were butterflies and native bees all over it all season long, and it's a very attractive plant. And they need that energy as they're going to migrate down from, you know, your place in Ohio down to Mexico. And it also would be a mitzvah if you had a nice water source for the butterfly. Sometimes in the late summer, fresh water is really scarce, and these creatures need water, and they come to water. So you would fill little dishes with pebbles and then fill the dishes with water so the butterflies can come and land on the pebbles and take water from that.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing to mention, never put any kind of a butterfly habitat near a birdhouse or a bird feeder because birds will eat the butterflies, which is bad. Yeah, bird and butterfly gardens are separate gardens.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, well, good luck this summer.
Your knowledge is impressive.
All right. Well, thank you, Elizabeth.
As well as your duckiness.
All right. You take care.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and once again warn everybody who's eyeballing their holly and evergreens not to prune those plants for holiday decorations too early. Wait until nights have been consistently cold and no sudden warm-ups are predicted. But don't go running outside with duct tape to fix those plants up just yet, because we'll be right back to walk you through the wonderful world of water and reveal how to sell your house and keep your plants too. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it is one of our most frequently asked questions. We're selling our house and have priceless plants in the front yard. Can we take them with us when we move? Well, the answer is no. But we can have a cagey way that you can keep those plants and sell your house, too. We'll tell you all about it. We'll also take more of your fabulous phone calls. But now it's time to welcome our very special guest, Sam Lemhenny, designer of the famed Philadelphia Flower Show. He is here to give us a sneak peek of what we can expect at the world's largest indoor flower show in March of 2018. Sam, welcome back to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me. I always love it.
Thanks for being had. You know, people who are outside the area may wonder, you know, it's a national show. Why are you paying attention to Philly? It's not a national flower show. It's an international flower show. Was there a country not represented in, say, last year's crowd?
Yeah, we get about anywhere from 7 to 10 different countries that we represent or that come and visit the flower show. Over 40 states always come to the flower show. And you know,
what, are the Dakotas shy here or something?
I think it just depends on where it's snowing and whether they can get out with the plane or not. But it's really an amazing show that everybody loves to come and see, and it's a bucket list, I think, show for a lot of people who are into horticulture, who love flower shows and who love flowers, that the flower show is the place to come. And it is a bucket list for one time in your life to actually come and visit.
There is really nothing like it. What, a third of a million people on average come during the 8 days? Yep. How many acres of actual displays? Over, hardcore, gigantic.
Yeah, it's about 10 acres in the convention center, right downtown Philadelphia. And believe it or not, we're building it all on a concrete floor, which is pretty amazing for our exhibitors to actually make spring come to life and really give you that taste of spring in the beginning of March when nothing's growing and nothing's blooming yet, and you come into the flower show and you really think that it's spring. It's pretty amazing.
My only regret of having exhibited there for 5 years when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine is seeing how the sausages were made. Being there on that first day with the diesel fumes and the blast doors wide open.
And the big piles of mulch. Yeah. And the... Yeah, it's pretty amazing to watch it come together. It's
and then 10
it's my
days
favorite
later,
part, actually.
10 days later, it's Versailles in season.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes us 10 days to set it up, 10 days to maintain it and get all the visitors through.
And then 10 minutes to tear it
10
down.
Minutes. It literally, it's about 3 days. Yep. It doesn't take us that long to take it out, but it's an amazing show.
Now, last year's theme was the Netherlands, and everybody expected it to just be endless flower bulbs, and it was so much more than that. We really got to see how green the Netherlands are in terms of their energy usage and their sustainability, and very surprising show, actually.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that we were so lucky in picking Holland. Obviously, the bulbs are what people are going to come to expect, and we certainly delivered on that in the entrance garden with over 30,000 bulbs that year. But we really wanted to dive a little bit deeper, and that's really what the Horticultural Society, and that's I've started doing that a little bit more with the themes, is trying to pick themes that we can dive a little bit deeper. Certainly give something that people really expect to see in the color and the wow and the entertainment that really is expected of the flower. And then they also give them something to walk home with and say, scratching their head going, I didn't realize that that's what Holland was all about.
And the year before, was the national parks. Was that the anniversary of the national park system?
Yeah, it was their 100th anniversary of the institution of the national park system, and we had so much fun working with them too. And again, another way to, you know the beauty of the national parks, but let's dive a little bit deeper into those parks and understand why those parks are important and why it's important for that to exist and why we should all visit those parks and see them around.
And an excuse for you to put a geyser into the convention center, right?
Absolutely, and a great way for me to, last summer, my family and I went to Utah and visited 7 different national parks, so we got inspiration and inspired and got on the plane and flew as well, too. So it was, hopefully a lot of people did that and went to see some parks that they had never seen before that they've always wanted to see.
This coming year, I understand the theme is Waters of the World.
It's called Wonders of Water, or as we say here in Philadelphia, the Wonders of Water. Right, exactly. So we're having fun with water.
You're going to have water ice?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have
sit
water
on
ice.
Sit on a stoop and eat water ice?
This is going to be a fun show with thinking of water as, you know, water is certainly an essential element to gardening, and we interact
and
as
humans.
Gardeners and humans, exactly. But gardeners interact with water every day, and we also want to make sure that you're entertained at the flower show, which you always are. So fountains and waterfalls will be a part of that as well. But then
now,
the
wait
bigger
a minute.
Pieces.
Now, wait a minute. Sam has his fingers in the air, and he's ticking off this. Water is the enemy. of the exhibitors at
not
the
this year.
Flower
it's our friend.
Show.
Water is our friend, Mike, this year.
Like Sam said, we're dealing with a flat surface. Every exhibit is not only going to have water, it's going to be shooting all over the place. Just how terrified are you of leakage here? You know, is the entire convention center going to be wearing some sort of adult garment? You know,
right. We're all going to give out ponchos for everybody who have offices on the second floor at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. I think they're more worried than mine. My office is up on the third floor. The flower show sits on the second floor, and there are literally Pennsylvania Convention Center offices right below the main floor. So sometimes they do get a little wet when we have a leak here and there. We've put some really strict rules. Our associates.
This is ridiculous, Sam. You know, as a former exhibitor.
I'm not giving in, Mike. I'm not giving in.
As a former, why didn't you pick fire? Poisonous snakes. What could go wrong? Try your own chainsaws right. and crossbows.
You know those things we put around the gardens, those cold water socks. Yeah. I think we've sold those out already. They're already stockpiled in the back of the convention center right now. And double liners and thick liners to make sure that we don't have leaks. We're taking every precaution to make sure there isn't people walking through water. Although that would be a fun exhibit. Put your boots on and splash in the puddles as we all did as a kid.
I thought you were planning the poisonous snakes for 2020. You know, some of them are very colorful, Sam.
They are, absolutely. Not sure our guests would love that one.
So what do you know that you can tell us? Give us an example of one of the exhibits that you're working on. Well, Sam, by the way, designs the central exhibit, the big walk-through exhibit that, you know, it's really kind of expanded. It can go off in all directions and have multiple parts to it. But then outsiders, again, like me in the 90s when I was the editor of Organic Gardening, if you have the resources, you stage your own major exhibit.
Correct.
So what are you excited about, something you're doing or something somebody else is doing?
I'm excited about both. I think the entrance garden is always something that I always get excited about, and I hope all the visitors get excited about it as well. One thing that I didn't cover when I was ticking off my fingers was the conservation of water, and that's a big piece that we want people to leave run. And again, that's the one thing I think people are going to come scratching their heads leaving going, yeah, I really need to become more involved in that. We are going to be creating, and to make sure we hit all the gardening and the wow factors and the entertainment and the color, rainforest that you're going to walk through. This is going to be more of a contemporary rainforest, but actually we'll cover over it. We're going to put scaffolding up that the visitors will actually be walking around and bring the plants to the visitor. So they're going to be walking around in amongst vines and palm trees. And
now,
really
when you
just
say
sort of
scaffolding, this is like when you're a tourist in Costa bamboo. Rica and you go up into the canopy?
All made of bamboo, yeah. We're not going to make you go up into the canopy, but we're actually going to bring the plants down to you, right? We have to make sure that everybody can access this and make sure they enjoy it, but we're going to make sure that people can be immersed in the rainforest.
So is that the central
That
exhibit?
Is the entrance garden. It's the first thing you're going to see. It's the closest to the doors we've ever gotten, and you're going to experience that as soon as you walk in the door with tropical ferns and palm trees, heliconias, anthuriums,
birds of paradise, orchids,
birds of paradise, absolutely, that will just engulf you as you go. We're going to have a rain curtain, so we will have water flowing. We will have a waterfall, one of the tallest waterfalls we've ever did, about 25 feet tall, seven different tiers of waterfalls that falls into this beautiful tropical garden, and all the flowers will kind of give you this subtle rainbow effect that you'll see as you go through there. But again, tying this into the reason we're picking the rainforest is because when you think about water and the role that plants play in water, they really are the purifiers. They're the cleaners of water. That's what they do. Their root systems, their leaves, they all do that hard work of if there's pollution and things in the air, that the leaves and the roots and the plants actually do purify the water and take those impurities out. So we wanted to showcase that. And no better system on the planet than the rainforest that does this. And it really is amazing. So we want to showcase some of the systems and some of the layers and some of the things that happen in the rainforest that, guess what, in the Delaware River watershed, where most people that come to the show get their water, their drinking water from, we need to make sure that those systems are in place around and up and down the Delaware River watershed to make sure our water is clean. And the plants and the flowers are the ones that do that. And we're actually going to show that. The William Penn Foundation, which one of their main funding arms is the Delaware River watershed. And so they've provided us with a grant to communicate this. And so we're creating, like you said, one of these large major exhibits that focuses on the Delaware River watershed and the superhero plants that live in those areas that we know and see and love every day to make sure that visitors understand that those are important plants, make sure they're protecting them, and advocate for that to make sure there's not a lot of development that goes straight up to the water's edge and there is those riparian buffers that make sure that are cleaning the water. So it's all important. Great, beautiful stuff. Great, beautiful plants and gardens, but people are going to leave thinking, all right, yeah, I really do need to know this and really make sure that I'm making a difference in the world.
one of the favorite things I've seen at previous flower shows. And I forget exactly what the theme was the last time we were there, was the giant Amazonian lily pads.
Right.
What year was that? What show was that? Do you remember? They're all blurred together.
It was Passport to the World was when we did that, did the Amazonicas for the first time, and Longwood worked with us on those.
Because the very idea of shipping, how 10 feet across, 6 feet across?
The biggest ones, I think, were about 6 feet across. We had anywhere from 3 foot to 6 foot. And they brought them in these huge crates that were all
filled with water.
With water, and spritzed them. And it was just amazing to watch them come in.
They came in February.
Correct. They came from the greenhouses, were put into a heated truck, and then right to our heated water. And we actually put heaters in the water to make sure that they stayed.
Oh, they were beautiful. They were beautiful. Yeah. Any chance they're coming back?
Not this year. We'll definitely have water lilies, but the Amazonicas were a little... It's very tough and difficult to force them, but we'll work on other water lilies and other water plants for the show.
Well, you and I know how blessed we are to be in this region. Not only do we have the flower show once a year, but all year long, we've got Longwood Gardens, we've got Chanticleer, we've got Nemours Mansion and Gardens.
This is America's garden capital right here, in Philadelphia.
But one of the nicest things, and I often forget it, and I accidentally time it, is when the water lilies are in bloom at Longwood Gardens, and you plan to be there during the day.
Correct.
And then get back there at night, because different flowers will be open at different times of day.
That's correct. Yeah, it's amazing to watch that. And we'll have five or six different varieties of water lilies that we're going to showcase, and lotus mixed together, as well as some other water plants at the flower show to really highlight that. And there'll be mist and fog, and it'll really have this great special feeling. We're actually going to have a rope bridge that you'll be able to walk through. Everybody will be able to access this rope bridge and walk through the garden this year, which is going to be really fun. But I'm really excited about the waterfall that is going to be amazing. And again, all the scaffolding is all covered and laced with bamboo, so it'll make it feel like you're in the jungle and really make you feel like you're immersed in this experience that we really loved our visitors to do, and really sort of transport them to a different environment, a different world than what they just walked out from the street.
I want to mention, because we haven't said the dates, the flower show in 2018 is March 3rd to the 11th, with a preview for the members on Friday, March 2nd. Sam, back when I was exhibiting in the 90s, having a walkthrough exhibit was thought to be daring and exciting. But now you got rope bridges, right. You've got these highways through the rainforest. This seems a lot more interactive than what I'm used to.
Absolutely, and I think that's what people are wanting. I think they want to interact with the plants and flowers. They want to get close and personal with them. And so the more we can engage them and the more that we can get them involved in the exhibits, I think the more they're going to enjoy it. Pennsylvania Horticultural Society is who I work for and produces the flower show, is all about getting more gardeners and getting more plants in people's hands. And if we can get them closer to the plants at the flower show, and we can get them excited about gardening, and then they can start gardening and actually either maybe purchase a plant at the flower show, that's our goal. And we want to make sure that more people that are gardeners leave our show than come in. And that's really critical for us as a mission from a horticultural society. And people love gardening, and it's really fun. And as you know, people love to garden.
Now, again, this is not a local show. Philadelphia
Correct.
Is just where it is, but people come from all over the country and all over the world.
And we have exhibitors from all over the world as well, too. We have Jamie Drury, who is an international designer and TV personality, will be exhibiting at the show this year. He's from Australia.
But, Sam, Australia has no water. The only water they have is filled with poisonous jellyfish and sharks.
and the big... The Great Coral Reef, too, right? His design is still being worked on, and we're really looking forward to seeing what he's designed. We have exhibitors from the UK as well. This is something that we really enjoy showcasing to the people that are here in Philadelphia and all the people that come to this
flower
show.
Is Holland coming back? Because I realize we just did this big show of the Netherlands. But when I think of water, and I'm thinking your rainforest, I'm thinking of Australia, where they have to be really clever because they don't have a lot of fresh water. And then I go back to Holland, where I actually helped them in the 90s restore the old system of dikes.
Correct.
To put seawater back onto the growing beds to kill disease.
We had lots of conversations with them actually while they were at the show this year, because we know our themes a couple of years in advance. And so we've been talking to them about getting involved in the show this year. And we hope to get them back for a couple of talks to talk about how they manage their water systems over there and how they use the windmills.
Because they're underwater.
Yeah, they absolutely are underwater. It was amazing when I was over in Holland and we're walking through the gardens and some of the greenhouses, and you look up and there's this huge dike and you actually see a boat that's 30 feet above your head. It was just absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah, but the gates are safe. They were made in the 1600s. They knew how to build things then.
You're just waiting for that the little boy to pull his finger out of the dike there.
So, once again, a Philadelphia Flower Show is at the Philadelphia Convention Center, right in the heart of downtown Philadelphia, across from the Reading Terminal.
You can take the train right to the building and never have to walk outside.
Yep, and you can take Amtrak into the city and then take, you know, take the L or whichever gets you there the easiest.
Yep.
So, the Philadelphia Flower Show, the wonders of water.
The wonders of water. You got
water.
It.
Water.
We love it.
Sounds like you're ripping off the old Disney wonderful world of color.
No.
Yeah. Sam came from Disney, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of tricks that I've learned from Disney and a lot of fun things we did from to entertaining the guests to educating them. So we'll have fun.
Like Disney World, like Epcot, the Flower Show is a show.
Really is. We want you to come be entertained. Absolutely. That's one of the number one things why people come to the show. But we also want you to learn about gardening as well. You know, there's things from novice gardeners for people who have never gardened before all the way up to the experts that garden every single day and really know their plants. People that listen to your show will love the show to understand.
They can listen to me at the Flower Show. I do a lecture every year. You can check the schedule online.
Absolutely.
All right, the fabulous Philadelphia Flower Show will be March 3rd to the 11th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in 2018. If you become a member of PHS, your membership includes tickets to the Flower Show, and you also have the option of coming in on Friday, March 2nd. And if you want to have a great formal time, I presume we're having our formal dinner again.
We are having our black tie. That is the Friday night, March 2nd. It is our preview party. It is the best way to see that show. And it's a great way to support the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society and all the great work we do throughout the year and all the great programs that we do to help beautify and the Philadelphia and the region of Philadelphia.
All right. Sam Lemhenny, designer of the Philadelphia Flower Show, which returns to the Pennsylvania Convention Center March 3rd through the 11th of next year. We're warning you now. We're teasing you now. This is the time to make your plans if you're out of town. You would not be disappointed. Sam, thanks so much for being on the show again.
Mike, thanks so much. Always enjoy being here and enjoy being on your show. Thanks so much.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and once again remind everybody in the land of deciduous trees to keep sucking and shredding as many fall leaves as possible, because you will regret every leaf you threw away or ignored when you get to August and you're out of compost and shredded leaves for mulch. But don't go looking for your blower that you can turn inside out and suck up and shred those leaves in one fell swoop right now, because we'll be back to sell your house, keep your plants, and take your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to a request from Fargo. You know we had to answer that question about selling a house and yet moving the plants along with it. You can't do that exactly, not and sell the house correctly, but we'll tell you a cheater's way of getting both ends of the stick. And remember, cheaters always win. In the meantime, more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sue, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Sue. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
And where is Sue wonderful?
I'm in Lamar, Missouri, which is in the southwest part of the state.
Okay, I got a mental image of that. What can we do for Sue from Lamar?
Well, after hearing last week's conversations on black walnuts, I thought people might enjoy hearing about the very remarkable black walnut harvest in Missouri.
This is, so it's official, right? We're just changing the name of the show, right? Now it's You Bet Your Black Walnuts.
Yes.
Okay, proceed. I give up.
About 30 million pounds of black walnuts are being processed in nearby Stockton at a company called Hammond's, and nearly all of these walnuts are gathered by individuals who have raked them up out of their yards and fields and taking them to hauling stations to sell.
Oh, okay. So people last week were telling us they find black walnuts packaged for sale in stores like the Acme and the Giant and the IGA. And some people said that they were from a Canadian source, but this is an American processor of black walnuts?
Right. It's the largest in the world. It's called Hammond's. And they set up these hauling stations. There are 238 of them in 14 states. So it's the entire Midwest that participates.
Now, do you work for Hammond's, or are you a hauler?
No, I've sold them walnuts before.
And what do you get?
This year they were paying $15 per 100 pounds.
Okay.
So you might only get $20 or $30 per tree, but you're going to rake them up out of your yard anyway if they're in your yard.
Right, and now they're not going to a landfill or feeding squirrels or mice or anything like that.
Right. I mean, apparently a lot of people do this if they got 30 million pounds this year.
30 million pounds. My neighbor, Willard, after he heard the show, told me that there's an Amish farmer in Lancaster County, which isn't all that far from where we live, and he buys them as well by the 5-gallon bucketful. But he doesn't use them as food. Will says he makes black dye from them.
Oh.
So it is a multi-purpose fruit. That's amazing. So obviously they process the nuts and they package them, and these are the ones that are for sale that people were talking about?
Right, right. The package says hand-gathered.
Oh, that's...
And also they sell the ground-up holes for an industrial abrasive. Supposedly they cleaned the Statue of Liberty with these holes.
I believe that. I have heard about natural products like rice hulls and nut hulls being used for, you know, essentially what used to be called sandblasting. So it sounds like every part of this nut is useful.
Not to mention the wood of the tree is very valuable. Another thing they were talking about is how they crack them. Well, there are black walnut crackers that make them easy to crack. So we don't sell our walnuts anymore. We eat them ourselves.
So what does your cracker look like?
Well, it's about 10 pounds and has a foot-long handle that's geared. And there's several offerings online for various nutcrackers, but it makes it easy to crack them.
So you just spin like a vise until the nut cracks?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So you used to sell your finds, and now you eat them yourself?
Right.
And in your spare time, you clean the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
All right. Well, everyone out there seems to be contributing to our knowledge of black walnuts. So we'll look for this company's products in the stores. What was the name of the company again?
Hammond's. H-A-M-N-O-N-S.
Okay. Hammond's. No D at the end. All right, bye. Sue. Thank you for being on You Bet Your Black Walnuts.
Thank you for having me. Bye, Mike.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Frank, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Frank. Thanks for asking. How are you, sir?
Very well, very well.
And where is Frank very well?
In Marlton, New Jersey.
Okay, the Garden State. What can we do for you, Frank?
Yeah, I have a strange problem this year. I have 4 rhododendrons in the front of my house. I planted them 38 years ago. And every year they bloom in May. And this year, for the first time, one of the rhododendrons is budding out. And you can see the flowers.
You can see the flower color.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, this could mean several things. One guess would be, it's the end of the world. What do you think, Robbie the organic robot? We haven't asked your opinion about anything in a long time. Robbie, is it the end of the world?
Danger, Danger, Will Robinson. My sensors indicate an intruder is present. Danger, Danger, Will Robinson.
I think Robbie agrees, Frank. It's the end of the world, climate change.
Well, I don't think it's that bad, but, you know, it must be something else.
I've been reading a lot of climatology journals lately, a lot of stuff in the popular press. One of the things that's really striking that's just being recognized lately is the intense warmth of our winters. Now, obviously, you know, you're always going to remember the 20-degree day or the 10-degree day or the minus 10-degree day if you're up in Wisconsin and Minnesota. But over average, on the average, our winters have become alarmingly warmer. And what happens when we get, you know, kind of an Indian summer, when we get a cold September or October, a couple of cold days in a row, and then it warms up again, some of these plants think it's spring and they're blooming. What I would suggest, and I'm just going to make this general because this could happen. I can remember my azaleas blooming in December one year, a lot of flowers appearing on them. And what I did was I watched the weather. And if there was going to be a crushing ice storm or heavy snow, or it was really going to drop well below freezing, I would go out in the evening before that, and I would cut the flowers that were halfway to all the way open and bring them inside. Because obviously, once that bud is open enough for you to see the flower color, it's not going to bloom again in the spring. It doesn't have that capacity.
Right.
So you might as well bring them inside and blow people away, really, just amaze them with spring blooming flowers on your dining room table for, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Yes. I also noticed on the other plants that the buds have gotten larger, like they're getting ready to bud out.
I wouldn't be surprised, man. Bud swell is what happens before the flowers open. Now, hopefully, things like rhododendrons, azaleas, forsythia, these are pretty hardy plants. And their biggest enemy, azaleas and rhododendrons, is being eaten by deer. So if the bud has swollen, but you can't see the flower color yet, I think they'll be fine. But once that outer covering of the bud opens up and you can see the color of the flower through, I think the smartest thing to do would be to bring them inside. One trick you can do is bring them inside and put them into a big jug of water that's somewhere between lukewarm and really warm. Not hot enough that it's uncomfortable to put your finger into the water, but it's warm water. It's the kind of water you would run on your hands to warm them up.
Okay.
And in that water, pour like a can of 7-Up or Sprite or some other lemon-lime soda that has real sugar, or at least the corn syrup in it, not diet soda. We found this out with cut flowers recently. The warm water encourages the stem to take up more water than it would if the water were cold. And both the natural lemon-lime in it and the sugars will actually feed the plant and encourage the flower to open, but also to remain open longer and to stay on the stem longer, especially if the plant itself is in a cool area of the house. And if you change out the water, don't be afraid to recut the stem and do the same warm water and 7-Up treatment again. But always keep the container where you're showing off the flowers in the coolest part of the house.
Okay. Okay, that sounds like a good idea. I'll try that.
All right, man. Thank you. We're seeing this all over the place. I have Japanese honeysuckle blooming in my woods. It's absolutely crazy.
Yes, we've had a warm fall, yes.
Yeah. No, the weather, the climate has changed dramatically. We can only hope it's just a temporary change. Sometimes these things happen naturally in cycles. There's going to be heck to pay if winters continue to stay warm, though.
Yes, I'm sure. Sure.
All right, man. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
So long.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. But first, a change in your playbill. The part of Alexis Landis, who normally reads the question and is the producer of You Bet Your Garden, whenever she happens to feel like it, will be played by our intern, Robert Fogarty, who I'm going to shock and surprise by mentioning he just won a great award for a fabulous video you made, Bob. What was the category of the award?
It was best sports video for a website under a million monthly followers, unique million followers, something to that extent.
Okay.
Editors and publishers did the award.
Okay, very good. All right, the question of the week is called Moving, Don't Pack Your Landscape. Robert Fogarty, our fine intern here at You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's question.
Sure, Mike, I'll be happy to. Sue in Fargo, North Dakota writes, "We're in the process of building a new house, but will not be able to move in until February. We have not put our current house on the market yet. I have some plants I'd like to move to the new place, but the outside work isn't finished and the topsoil is still in a pile at the back of the lot. Can I move the plants into large pots and winter them over in an unheated garage? I've been waiting for the weather to get cold to make sure my plants are dormant. The plants I want to move are peonies that originally belonged to my grandparents, old-fashioned daylilies, Asiatic lilies, and a rosebush, which is also for my grandparents." Mike, you only picked this question because it's from Fargo.
No, maybe. Okay, yeah, but there's no wood chipper involved. You got to give me that.
I don't have to give you anything. Now, I know you're going to tell her no, but these are her grandparents' plants.
Dining room tables, jewelry, artwork, that special chair you set in every Thanksgiving, family photos. These are all things that you own and can take with you when you move.
But people don't own their own landscaping? That is so cruel.
It is neither right nor wrong, Robert. It is, as Dickens wisely noted, the law. When you sell a house, you can't take the doors and windows, but you can take the curtains. You can take standalone lighting fixtures like a table lamp, but you can't take a ceiling fan. And you can't take the trees and shrubs that are outside for the same reason. They're not furniture. They're embedded structures.
So boom, just like that, you wipe out generations of horticultural history?
Nice. Last week I was a Jedi. Today I'm Darth Vader's evil twin.
Everyone listening wants to keep those peonies and roses.
Except mean old Darth here, right? Now, of course, there's a way for her to preserve those plants. It's just going to take some finessing. As a dear friend of mine once said, these things must be done carefully.
Great. Now you're quoting a Wicked Witch.
Hey, it's the Wicked Witch. And winter in Fargo would freeze the wings right off of her flying monkeys, man.
Oh, yeah. And the same thing would happen to plants in an unheated garage.
You got it. Although summers are perfect for agriculture, winter in Fargo means 0 degrees Fahrenheit or lower 43 nights of the year on average. Plants are lucky to survive in the ground, much less in pots in a garage, where they would perish shortly after receiving blankets, chocolate, and a lawyer from the Red Cross.
And, as you've mentioned in the past, having a bunch of big holes in the front yard can greatly decrease the selling price of a house.
Ha! Unless it's in the winter in Fargo, when prospective buyers won't even see the ground under their average 52 inches of snow. So you want a plan that works for everybody here?
Let's have a plan.
It's going to be hard enough to get that new house finished as they move into a Dakota winter. So concentrate on that construction now. My gut also tells me that house hunters aren't out looking in Fargo in February. So plan to go all out in the spring when most houses are sold. And the nice landscape plants that will then be visible will add as much as 20% to the sale price.
They can't sell these plants.
Well, they're both going to sell them and share them. The roses are the easiest here. Take cuttings in the spring, root them in a soil-free medium, and install them as new plants in the new place in, say, August, when the cuttings will have achieved a good size. You can even request permission to come back and take repeated cuttings. Those plants are still going to be your grandparents' exact roses, but you'll avoid the risk of killing a really old rose by trying to move the whole thing. And leaving the mature, established plant in place is going to make that house look much more attractive to a buyer.
Mike, what about the peonies?
Well, two possibilities with these plants. I would personally allow them to flower and then collect the dried seed pods after the flowers fade. Those seeds should grow the exact same plants. And the new owners have no reason to object. Collecting seed doesn't negatively affect the look of the landscape.
What's the other option?
Craft a rider in the sale agreement that gives you permission to dig up the peonies and daylilies after the sale and replace them with mature plants of equal or greater value. The most important thing here is to not do a panic dig now. It would take amazing expertise and lots of luck to overwinter the plants successfully. And if they die, you're double out of luck. There's no heirloom plants to treasure, and you've lost money because of an ugly yard instead of great curb appeal. Now, it's Fargo. About that wood chipper.
I knew it.
Well, that sure was some great information about how to get a good price for your place without disrespecting plants from your nanan and pop-pop now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to poach my peonies if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. And if you expect an answer, include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you're going to find the answers to all those questions you were going to send us, audio this show, past shows, and our podcast. We continue to send get well wishes to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter continues to play our theme song. Our parole officer, Sweet Staven Naomi Sturobin, is preparing to present to a grand jury. Our engineer, Al Banks, is now more than ever taking the fifth and the sixth. Our social media director, Amanda McGrath, says, yada, yada, come and get me, coppers. Assisting the authorities with their inquiries are webmasters Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz. Alexis Landis often produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Sometimes. Okay, more like every once in a while, whenever she feels like it. Our head chairman, associate producer of Production Association, and this week's producer is Brett Rader. Congratulations once again to our intern, Robert Fogarty, who just won a major award for an excellent video. Our editor, Al Banks, is still waiting for that call from the MacArthur Foundation. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I won the English Prize from the Sacred Heart Society when I graduated St. Bartholomew's in 1965. $25 cash, people. Cash money in 65. 25 smackolas. That bought a lot of pinball, cheesesteaks, and Superman cards that summer, cats and kittens. But now it's time to go back to the future so I can say I'll see you again next week. What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do, only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.